You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory. We're trying to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Charlie Davies. What's up, boys? How's it going? How's it feel to be, Dave, the lone person on this panel not wearing makeup? Just asking. I just want to know, when you look around and you see our faces and your jaw drops and you think, wow, I've never seen them look this good.
I'll say this, and I think everyone can see this in the camera. If you're not watching on YouTube, we are on YouTube every single episode now, so you can watch it. I still look younger, and I still look more vibrant than all three of you.
Wow.
Well, that's a lie.
Mm. Yeah.
Look at this. My skin looks better than Weeby's.
That's not true.
I look as young as they come.
Yeah, I've got a
Charlie. You got a goatee. You look like you're in the old Western.
I have to keep that, otherwise I look like I'm under 18.
I will say you've aged a lot in the last 3 years.
Ooh. Thank you.
Yeah, like
it's been a good 3 years for me.
Has it?
Yeah, because I've experienced the world.
It doesn't.
Oh, I age because I take so much in of the world. I'm being so cultured.
You're wise and experienced.
Exactly.
It's like a sponge that's been in the sink.
I'm like a rabbi.
2 weeks too long.
The more training you get, the older you look.
Gotcha. Look, a programming note for you.
Sorry
here.
Sorry, you had to explain that one.
Switch over to YouTube and then wonder why we all look exactly the same. Abby Wambach, we teased that interview, but it is only on YouTube. Another reminder to go there if you want to watch and listen to Extra Time driven by Continental. Also, this weekend, week 29 in Major League Soccer, three teams clinched their Audi MLS Cup playoff berth. That is DC United, New York Red Bulls, and Toronto FC. And most of them had to do that. Well, I think all three of them didn't even have to do anything. Yeah, Toronto got a draw on LA, but Orlando lost.
It's not a bad way.
Houston lost.
Not a bad way to get your job done.
Chicago drew against FC Cincinnati. So, like, the bottom of the East helped the middle of the East do their thing. So all those teams are in. One spot remains in the East. Six spots still are up for grabs in the Western Conference. We'll talk more about that later. But, come on, news of the weekend. And it was painful to watch, and it's painful to think about. Joseph Martinez, one of three in the Golden Boot race. Last year's most valuable player, last year's record setter of the all-time single-season goal mark with 31, was chasing that again, had a 15-game scoring streak going, and then against San Jose, he leaves on a stretcher with a towel over his face. It looked like he was crying as he sat against the ad boards. It was tough. He collided with Pity Martinez. It looked knee-to-knee. He did try to come back. He was not able to come back. Frank DeBoer said afterward, quote, "I'm afraid that he has something serious," and boy, oh boy, that made for a nervous Saturday night and Sunday for Atlanta United fans and the neutrals like myself that really want to see Joseph Martinez in the playoffs trying to help Atlanta United repeat, whether they do or not, just for entertainment and soccer reasons. Sunday brought a little bit of clarity. Taylor Twellman tweeted that it was not as serious as it previously looked, and then Doug Roberson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported that Joseph will miss several weeks with that knee injury, and the timetable could, keyword could, mean that he could return by the playoffs. Atlanta, we know now, will have at least one home game in the playoffs. On Monday, the reports from training, Frank DeBoer, ligaments are looking okay. That is good news. The injury is to the knee and the ankle. That doesn't seem like as good of news. And Joseph is on crutches. Less positive.
Crutches? They don't have like a hoverboard for him to just float around at this point?
There's not like four guys that can just put him in a chair like a pharaoh.
Just carrying around in an oxygen chamber at all times?
Anywhere this man wants to go, get him healthy. In order to be ready for that first playoff game, if they do not overtake NYCFC, he would have to be ready to go by October 19th or 20th. That is 26 or 27 days away from this Monday as we record. That's about 3 to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What does this injury mean? We'll start with you, Doyle, to Atlanta, to Major League Soccer, to people that just love to see the ball go in the back of the net.
Well, I'll take the first and third of those to the neutrals, to people who just like to see high-scoring soccer. It's bad. And for Atlanta United, it's really bad. Thank you.
All right. That's it from Doyle. Charlie, maybe you have some more well-fleshed thoughts here.
If he's not a part of this roster starting, they have no shot at winning MLS Cup. Zero. 57 goals in 2 years. And you talk about a player that strikes fear into opposing defenses and their fan bases, and you're watching with anticipation because he is always making runs. He's in the right spots. And when he gets his chance, he finishes. And the celebrations, too, of, you know, going to the Atlanta fans and bowing down like he's a king. It's just what he brings to the table, the complete picture. Without him, this is not Atlanta United. This is not the team that we're accustomed to seeing running at teams, scoring goals, having fun. Without him, they have no shot.
Zero. But zero, he zero. Says.
Agreed. But they could beat the New England Revolution at home without him. And they could beat Toronto FC at home. They could win a playoff game without him, which just makes the timetable a little bit safer in that you're starting to say it's about 5 weeks that he has to get back.
Well, you say several weeks he's out.
Yeah.
That means no training, no running. You lose your sharpness. You lose your fitness. There's a lot that goes into it. So it's not he's out 4 or 5 weeks, and then all of a sudden on the 6th week in that playoff game on the road or at home – that he's all of a sudden he's making runs and it's to Joseph Martinez that we're all accustomed to seeing.
I'm not going to bet against Joseph. If that's the way it plays out, I actually would not bet against Joseph in that case. I will make 2 points. One, they have Tito Villalba. Tito Villalba hasn't played a lot under Frank DeBoer. He's not really a center forward, and certainly not in the same way that Joseph is, but he's a super talented player. We've seen that over the previous 2 years. You should be able to figure out how to do at least a little something with Tito Villalba in there. Second, to make it bad again for Atlanta fans, you talked about the runs he makes, Charlie. Like watching Joseph Martinez off the ball, like usually center strikers don't give a team its shape. Usually center strikers, they react to the shape and to the ball around them. With Joseph, it's the opposite. What he does without the ball actually gives Atlanta their form because he's the one dragging the entire opposing backline and sometimes the defensive midfielders as well. He drags them around and suddenly PT or Hindman or Barco, if he comes back, they have space underneath and suddenly Miram has all this room on the overlap. If it's someone else doing it, like nobody else has that kind of gravity. That space isn't going to be there. I expect it to look super mechanical again from Atlanta, kind of like the way it did in April, May, and June when they were really struggling.
Actually, there is a chance that it couldn't because, yes, everything you said about Joseph is correct, except he's not going to drop in and change where he plays. And Villalba will, and it could actually change where everyone starts to play because do you rotate those three? Does Miram start to float inside? Does whoever's playing on the right side, Hyman, Gressel, do that? Does PT get chances to run at center backs 1v1 because Villalba drops deep and plays him through? So there could be a chance. Obviously, not you don't want to do it in the last 2 games of the regular season going into the playoffs. There could be a chance to start to see different looks from Atlanta United, which could be interesting.
Yeah, look, this is glass half empty, a lot of this, in that Joseph, man, he can't train, he can't do this. They're completely different. Is the glass half full take that maybe behind the scenes, we don't know it. Perhaps Joseph's superhuman as far as his healing powers go. Maybe this is deja vu from Miggy last year where we wrung our hands. We worried. And I'm trying to remember. That was a hamstring?
Yeah.
Or a quad? It was some sort of muscle injury,
yeah.
Regardless. But it looked like he might not get there. And it looked like he maybe shouldn't play on it because he had EPL interest and Atlanta had to capitalize on their investment. Maybe, and I know it's scary right now, and it always is after these injuries, and you might know better than I would, Charlie, when it comes to actual soccer injuries. Maybe he gets 4 or 5 weeks to rest his body, and maybe he comes back refreshed. Is that the glass half full? Is there a possibility that that's the scenario? I do not want to speculate on injuries, and we're not going to do that. But I'm just saying, in a universe, mm-hmm. could that be something that could happen?
Yeah. I mean, that's what you hope for, that he's not as badly injured as we all think. And it's maybe 2 or 3 weeks that he can't participate in anything. And maybe after 3.5, he's jogging and he's back to stretching and doing, you know, the lighter training loads. And so he's good to go for those crucial playoff games. That's what you hope for. And in a perfect world, it allows an opportunity for a Barco and Petey Martinez and Dion Pereira, who I've liked in seeing him various times throughout the season. It gives other guys an opportunity to step up. And that's where I think you get the benefits of having Joseph Martinez, if there are any. that guys need to come out and deliver.
Did Frank DeBoer make a mistake in sort of shunting Tito Vialba to the side? Because he's been available. And I remember being in Portland for that game at Providence Park, and pregame, Tito Vialba basically sulking around the pitch, like sitting on the chair on his phone while his teammates are checking everything, just kind of being like he knows he's not going to play. And if you look at his numbers from the last three seasons, it goes from 34 games played, 34 started for Tata in year one, 13 goals, 11 assists, all the way down to 17 games played, just 9 starts this year, 1 goal, 4 assists, less than 900 minutes. You had this asset that we all knew was potentially a 10-10 player in MLS.
Been injured at all this year?
He's had a variety of injuries, but he's also, Weeby's right, he has been kind of eased out of the rotation by Tata, really, from day one, from what I saw.
And the other good news is that Ezequiel Barco is training, to speak of injuries, and they expect him potentially to be back against Montreal a week from now, next weekend. So you start to get some of your pieces back. You start to have a couple days to mess around and see what happens. And Bobby Warshaw made the point on Matchday Central last night that maybe this is the moment that Pity Martinez was waiting for, where he is, as he was often at River, he is the number one. And maybe he starts to play like the number one because he hasn't always played like
that. I've seen no indication from anything related to this team that anybody but Joseph Martinez can be the number one. Like, he was the MVP last year. He was the MVP of the Cup last year. This year, this season, was in danger of like just going completely off the tracks and into the ditch. And Joseph said, nope, climb on my back. And he scored a goal, at least a goal, in 15 straight games. Like, I don't think that, like,
there's never a question of who's number one.
Yeah.
But I think from Pete Martinez's standards, you're coming as the reigning South American player of the year. And all of this European interest, and you come to a team and the expectations of fulfilling Almirón's shoes, you would expect to deliver goals, assists, and have those numbers and be the guy. But you're nowhere near Joseph Martinez. You realize this is his team, and you're trying to play to kind of cater to Joseph Martinez, to impress him, to have Joseph enjoy playing with you, because at the end of the day, that's what matters. Now with him out, now you're the guy. And so now can you go up and step up and show the guys, hey, I can deliver?
Have you seen that from PT in this league?
Absolutely not.
I mean, have we seen
it? Now's a chance. Now's a chance.
You have seen him play that way in high-level competition. You know he's capable.
One off, right? Then this was always the knock on PT in South America. It was like when it was a big game, PT would show up. And
these
he proved
games.
It.
So, NYCFC, 2 weeks left in the season, no Joseph. This is a big game.
Okay.
Playoffs, week one, round one at home. Those are big games.
Okay,
we'll see.
So you're betting on PT.
I'm putting.
You here to write that?
You're putting everything.
So he
on
just
PT.
Guaranteed it. Guaranteed that.
More than that.
Wow.
I'll put my mortgage on it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Put your debt on it. Put your debt on it.
Cam Weeby's future
no, you will
tuition.
Not. You get out of here. Get out of here.
Bro, we don't money
even,
in the bank.
I don't even have that money.
He said, don't even throw that juju over here.
Yeah, I'm kidding. We got to get a scholarship. All right. Let's talk Michael Parkhurst. I mean, the doom and gloom for Atlanta, we hope, will not be doom and gloom if there's some good updates on Joseph Martinez. Regardless, whatever it takes to heal this man, get it done, because I want to see him in the playoffs. It would be a shame not to see him in those games. Michael Parkhurst has been a legend in Major League Soccer. He announced his retirement on this Monday in a kind of a like shaky cell phone video, which I thought was like really fitting. And he said, hey, at a later date, I'll come back with something a little bit bigger. But for now, I'm wearing my hoodie and I'm on the training field. And hey, this is it for me. Let's give him his due. 10 MLS seasons, more than that in Europe, of course. He'll have more than 300 games, we expect, by the end of this year. He's sitting at 299, I think, in the regular season. We'll see. He may not get it. But with playoffs, he definitely has it. The incredible thing about Michael Parker is, in addition to the trophies, 2 Open Cups, an MLS Cup, of course, last year, the Campeones Cup, which I shall never, ever forget.
And a Superliga.
Yes, a Superliga, 2 Danish Cups. He's got a couple Gold Cups as well. He's Rookie of the Year. He's Defender of the Year, Best 11.
Champions League.
6-time All-Star.
Wasn't he in the team of the round one time for Champions League?
I believe so,
there you
go.
Get it all in there. Get all the individual awards that you can. And then he
helped,
was.
Like Ty Juve.
Humanitarian of the year, but fair play award 3 times because this man had a foul every 2.6 games in Major League Soccer for a center back. He had a yellow card every 14 games, and that's just because in recent years he had like a 1 year with 6 yellow cards. His first couple with the Revs, he had like 3 in 4 years playing every single minute. You two, I think, are best positioned here. Doyle being the old man in the sea of MLS, and Charlie, I think you played against him and with him.
Yep.
Michael Parkhurst, maybe a guy that people who just got into the league would not appreciate enough.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We usually think of the field general as being the central midfielder, a Michael Bradley type, or if you want to go on like the higher level, it would be like a Xavi or Pirlo. I feel like Michael Parkhurst did that from center back for a long, long time, including with last year's Atlanta United team. His ability to just arrange where on the field the game was being played, and then make the plays. That, like, I tweeted out a highlight from earlier this year, back when he was still playing. He like stopped an opposing counterattack with his back to goal, then just spun 180 degrees and hit a left-footed ball through two lines of the defense right onto his attacker's foot. This is a pass that most center backs can't make. This is a pass that most center backs don't even think of making. And Michael Parkhurst made that play. And of course, we remember what happened last year in MLS Cup, which it was a tight game for 40 minutes. And then he read a play unfolding when, Obobese had his back to goal and they're trying to play through him. And he said, "We've scouted him. I had looked at the film. I knew that in these situations, he goes to his left." And he jumped it and he made the play. He made the goal that Joseph scored that turned into an MLS Cup win. And it's cliche to say the guy who was undersized and, not that athletic and all that, he got by on his brains. Like Michael Parkhurst, it was more than he just got by on his brains. He was who he was because he just seemed to understand the game at such a high level. He made every read a step and a half before pretty much anyone else. He was fun to watch.
It's not those plays, actually, that make me appreciate Michael Parker, so those will be kind of at the top when you think about him. It's the ones that you never think about because it never turns into anything because he cuts it out before it even has a chance to.
Yeah.
You played against him early on. I think you were in college, Charlie, when he was with the Revs. You were a teammate of him with the U-23s, right? Was it the Olympic team?
Mm-hmm.
Give us some memories, man.
Well, first, I got to congratulate him on a remarkable career and for also giving me the confidence to know that I'm ready to turn professional.
Wow, he got in your ear? He said, "Charlie, you're good to go?"
No, it was more, we played them in a spring game, Boston College versus the New England Revolution, 2006. I was coming off a five-month recovery from a meniscus tear in college, and it was my first game back. I was worried, and I'm going one-on-one against Parkhurst, and scored a goal, and I was like, okay, I'm ready to go.
Thank you, Michael.
But in all seriousness, he's one of those players that, was just cerebral, just a thinker, ahead of the play, maybe three or four plays ahead, and being able to read a player's mannerisms. He knew where, playing against him with the Revs in Columbus, he always knew where I wanted to get. Where I was, the space I was looking to get into, and he would either cut that out before he'd get to that spot before I did, or he'd make sure that the defenders in front of him would shield the ball or push players away from that space, so I couldn't even have the opportunity to get a ball played into that space. So he was always anticipating plays. He made it very difficult for strikers to get comfortable. And he's a player that I've always had so much respect for because of his dedication to the game. He really wanted to, always give 110% on the training fields, not just in games. And as a teammate, he always liked to make light of situations in practice and on the bus rides with the Olympic team. So, I've always had an admiration for him, obviously watching him for the Revolution when I was a young college kid and seeing how well he adjusted to the professional game from Wake Forest. And, he's a Rhode Island kid, so he's a New England kid. There's not too many New Englanders who make it out as professional footballers. So it's always been special to watch him.
Future coach?
I could definitely see him being a future coach. He gets it. He understands it. He's played in Europe. He's had success in Europe. He's played in the U.S. men's national team. He's played in MLS. He's played everywhere. He gets it. He understands. He can talk to younger kids. I know, seeing him talk to some of the younger players like a Miles Robinson and getting him to understand what he needs to do to have success. And all of a sudden now Miles Robinson is one of the best defenders in the league. There's no, reason why
Well, I think of an email we got recently, or I think it was a Twitter conversation that you were having, and somebody hit us up and said, you guys should do this. And the question was basically, who would you kind of pluck out of the professional ranks or who just retired or who we're not talking about and say, you're now a positional coach, kind of like, you know, in the NFL, you might have a defensive backs coach or a tight ends coach. Well, Michael Parkhurst, you're now a positioning and anticipation and sort of
defensive
like,
coordinator.
Yeah, you're the guy who comes in and helps our back line understand and our young defenders understand what it takes thinking-wise and physically, because you can't just think it. You have to physically be able to do it, what it takes to succeed at the next level. Is he a Hall of Famer? National Soccer Hall of Fame, two more names went in. We've talked about this a bunch. You know we chatted with Sunil and Abby. You can watch that one again on YouTube. But there aren't guys in there, the National Soccer Hall of Fame, of late, who don't have incredible national team careers. I'm talking like 100 caps, multiple World Cups, legends. Would Michael Parkhurst be in that conversation? And I've wanted to have this conversation for a bit. The one about current MLSers or just retired MLSers or players who did mostly their damage in Major League Soccer and maybe had a cup of tea with the national team or had some good times. And Michael Parkhurst had those. He has a couple Gold Cups. He almost made that 2014 World Cup team. But would he be in the conversation? Because I know DeMarcus Beasley's going to be in it. I know Tim Howard, Josie Altidore, Michael Bradley. They'll make the Hall of Fame. I believe that. I don't think that's in doubt. But I do wonder about the Parkhursts of the world, the Wondolowskis of the world, the Chad Marshalls of the world, the Nick Raimondos, Kyle Beckermans.
I got one for you. Stu Holden.
Stu Holden is eligible right now, and he hasn't been voted in.
No. I mean, when you look at his career, you think of injury-ridden. I mean, similar to mine. No matter what, how good we could have been or how good we were, but we didn't really get there. Like, is that enough to make the Hall of Fame?
So
you know, I don't know the exact criteria that you need to get into the Hall of Fame.
Here I go. I got you. Let me give it to him. Okay. Just so we can shape this. A player has to be retired for 3 full calendar years. That's number one. So everybody has to qualify for that one. And then you have to have played at least 20 full international games for the U.S. And if you don't have that, if you're just talking about first division, you have to have played 5 seasons in an American first division pro league and been an all-star, either an all-star midseason or best 11 at least once. So those are the requirements.
Definitely take out the all-star one.
Yeah.
So Bakari Sumari right now,
that
who had a great,
definitely not be a
has
part
a great get, MLS get season. Well, if you take out
Wilfred Zahibo just needs a couple more appearances.
Well, good point about that. So let's just put it out there. What would it take? Because right now, MLS players, at least players who did the majority of their damage, as I said, are not getting into the Hall of Fame. In NASL, major indoor soccer leagues, the ASL from way back in the day, the ethnic leagues, all of those leagues of their time have a number of players who got in.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it going to take? Because I think MLS players should be there. I think Ralston and Moreno should be there, but they won't get there as it currently stands. What should it be? You as a voter, if you had a vote, you guys might. I don't know. You should ask them because I didn't know I had one until this year. What do you have to have? What should you have to have?
They didn't tell you have a vote?
I don't know how it happened. Nobody ever told me anything. And then I got an email saying you can vote. And I was like, if I had this in years past, I would have been there.
Apparently, Arch Bell gets to vote on the best FIFA awards, and he didn't know either. And he thought it was a spam email.
Oh, man. Yeah, maybe that's what happened to me, too. But anyway, I'm voting now, and I care. And I care so deeply about this.
There's no hard number. There's nothing, I don't think, that exists in things like this. Now, as being a sports fan in America, baseball's too big. Too many people get it.
Hmm.
It became an all-star team. NFL's the football one's probably too small. Not enough people get in. They do like one per position, I think, like 3 or 4 a year. So there's an in-between space, but it shouldn't be an all-star team. It should be special. Now, let's take Michael Parkhurst, for example. Phenomenal player. Taylor Twellman, Steve Ralston, Charlie Joseph, Matt Reese. That's just his Revs teammates who probably deserve to be in it over him. So
wait.
What?
Really?
Taylor Twellman, Steve Ralston, Charlie Joseph. Fine, you want to disagree about Matt Reese?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But the other three?
I think he's on the same level as Charlie.
Stop! Charlie Joseph's greatest player in MLS history.
Okay.
Starting at okay. 4 positions.
Clearly
we're dominant.
Having, yeah, clearly we're having a very serious conversation.
Oh, my
then.
God. Oh, my God.
Okay, get back to your point.
So, a player like that doesn't deserve to get in because it should be, I don't know, 2 or 3 a year at the most. And yes, Chris Wondolowski broke a record, like a goal scoring record. That should be in. Guys like Kevin Hartman, who played X amount of games over the course of whatever years, guys who won X amount of titles. Like, there are clear numbers that you can hit if you want to, but it becomes obvious when you look at a guy's career.
I think it's obvious that Nick Raimondo and Chris Wondolowski are certified Hall of Famers.
Yep. We will see.
I mean, there are a lot of guys who should be, and it just the voting.
Jaime Moreno is obvious.
Right. Like, Jaime Moreno was arguably the best player in the first decade of MLS history, and like no worse than like the third best player of that time, and he's not in. And voting is broken in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. It has been for as long as I have been paying attention to that sort of thing, which is, as Weeby likes pointing out, a very long time. I don't know if they have any intention of fixing it. They certainly haven't made any moves towards fixing it. The thing I keep going back to is the old Bill Simmons thing, where for the Hall of Fame, you actually make it a pyramid where, like, level one is the guys who are, like, no doubters. Like, Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, Tim Howard, guys who, like, absolutely at their pinnacle were great for the national team. They were great for their leagues. They are U.S. soccer, you know, legends. And, like, level two, okay, maybe it's guys like Moreno or Marco Echeverri who are amazing in this league and good for their national teams, but, you know, they weren't as good as like Howard and Donovan and Dempsey were, something like that. And you just keep going down, and then you get to a level where maybe like it is for like you or Stu or you know, other players who lost their, like John O'Brien, who lost a good chunk of their career,
but you don't,
to injury. Go ahead.
Okay. How about this? I'm gonna throw one out there.
I want to hear what he.
Yeah, I just
how
say,
many games did John O'Brien play in his career? Fantastic player, but you can't just put.
Okay, I mean that's fine. I pulled out a name of a guy who lost his career to injury, okay. And like John O'Brien should be remembered. He was awesome.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, with the way that they have set it up, it's just all or nothing, and it's not even all anymore. Yeah, it's just
mostly,
nothing.
It's mostly nothing.
Abby Wambach didn't get 100% of the vote.
How many guys score in Azteca Stadium?
Hey.
To take the lead, though.
How many, Charlie? What's the number?
I don't know. One.
Oh, okay.
Two. Little Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Three.
Three. Orozco.
That's right. Okay.
So Michael Orozco Fiscal is now officially a Soccer Hall of Famer.
National Soccer Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Let me just throw this out there. There's a thought experiment. Would Chad Marshall?
Absolutely. Yeah. Chad Marshall is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, there's no brainer. Yeah.
And maybe move him
to like that level two where he didn't do it for the national team, but he's the best center back in MLS history.
And Chad Marshall, I'm just going to tell you right now, he won't get in based on the way the current voting is, whether that's the process or the voters or whatever. And that's what, like, it rankles me. I'm upset about this. Here's some other names. I'm just going to throw them out there. Give your thoughts. Let's go to Ozzie Alonso.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yes? Everybody yes on that one? I'd be a yes on that as well. Yep. Best defensive mid for a decade. Well,
are you yes or no?
I'm yes. Okay. I'm not like you're not as quickly as Chad Marshall because he did it for two different clubs, and he won more MLS Cups.
Ozzie Alonso's not doing it for...
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. They didn't even clinch a playoff spot.
Minnesota
yet.
United legend.
Wondolowski.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's 100%.
Okay. Let's keep going down this list a little bit. Shalrie Joseph.
Obviously the greatest player in MLS.
It's a no-brainer for me.
I think this one is going to be a little bit tougher for people, but I think in the way I think about the National Soccer Hall of Fame, a guy like Shalrie should absolutely be there.
Mm-hmm.
Beckerman and Raimondo.
Yeah, of course.
Both. Yep.
Rico Clark.
No.
Borderline. Borderline. Rico was on some good teams, and he did some really good stuff. But
I love Rico.
I know. This one's tough for me.
Take his Houston teams. Like, where would you put him on those Houston teams?
I mean, he was the starting defensive midfielder for that 2005 Quakes team. That was freaking awesome, right?
And the point then becomes he's behind D-Row, he's behind Lant. Like, in terms of...
Or the point is that they're in front of him.
I'm going to throw some out there.
Got him.
I'm actually going to go the other way on you. Just, you know, memory of Rico Clark. How about Carlos Ruiz? Would Carlos Ruiz, if we're saying Jaime Moreno, not as much longevity.
Pescadito,
would he be in for you?
I think he should be.
It's more borderline. It's more borderline. Ugh, man, his postseason numbers, though, he was insane. Yep. He was the best postseason player.
If we're talking about players that were influential in MLS, then he has to be in Hall of Fame.
I agree. Yeah. I think that's the case,
can
too.
Can I ask
again,
one?
He will never get in.
Can I ask one that's not retired yet? Kai Kamara?
That's where the tiers come into play, and that's where I think like an MLS Hall of Fame is so important because I have a list of players here, like a Jason Kreis, didn't get in. Jeff Cunningham never will get in based on the
Jeff Cunningham
criteria.
Should 100% be in.
Into the National Soccer Hall of Fame.
Yes.
He won't get in.
He set the record for goals scored in the first division at the time.
Yeah. He scored double-digit goals in three different decades.
Yeah.
He won two Golden Boots, four times best 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a legend.
Mike McGee. Mike Pecky, Edson Buttle, Jesse Marsh. But that's where the MLS Hall of Fame comes into play here.
Jesse
How about this
Marsh.
One?
Yeah, none of those guys should be in.
Marsh will get in someday as a coach.
MLS Hall of Fame?
Okay, as a coach is different.
Yeah, but it's a little bit.
I wouldn't put him in as a
player only.
As a player only.
When you get into Hall of Fames.
It's got to be player only?
No, it has to be what you are. It's coach or player. I'm fine with putting coaches in.
Fine, fine.
But you can't, like,
How about
vote
this one?
Combined.
We'll finish here. Dwayne DeRosario.
100%.
Yes.
100% for me as well.
No doubt.
Christian Gomez, who just retired. Just retired.
Yeah.
He was a star when I just first started.
He wasn't here long enough.
Okay.
Yeah, he was great, but it was great. 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. Robbie Keane.
Oh, he was amazing while he was in MLS.
But it wasn't that. It was also, what, 4 years?
10, 11, 12. He was 5.5 years.
He's eligible.
Yeah. So he's probably in. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Christian Gomez might not have made 5 years.
Javinko is the better question. Keane's in because Keane had 5.5 years and he won three titles, two MLS Cups. No, three MLS Cups.
Three MLS Cups. Yeah.
Shield.
He was
awesome.
Notch. Yeah.
Javinko was only here 4 years.
So he's not even eligible.
Yeah, he should be in.
He won't be.
Yeah, maybe he should just come back for a year.
That's where we're talking about the MLS
he's
Hall of Fame win. Yeah, like this is it's difficult.
Tell Bruce.
Let us know what you think. What would you need to see from a player to make the National Soccer Hall of Fame predominantly as an MLS player?
Amazing celebrations.
Don Maduro, come on down.
Exactly. Kai Kamara, you're in. CJ Sapong, keep running those things out, my man.
Can I throw something on the end of this? Because I looked at the list. Also, it's a conversation that should be had and hopefully will over long term for NWSL. Because you look at Sam Kerr and Sawa and players that it's the number one league in the world for women's. And so you have great players from around the world who have come. First of all, 5 years becomes a bit aggressive because in the female game, you move a bit more often clubs. So that's another conversation that should
it is.
Have.
And
is
I've
it still the
it.
Number one league in the world, though?
Okay, that might be debate. I think it's,
but it's
the
number one in the U.S.
Talent.
It's the number one in the U.S., and that's what matters for this
one.
I've said that women are the number one least represented.
Underrepresented. And,
they should. Yep. There should be more. Kate Margraf, I don't know how the voters aren't pushing her in there, but we'll see. We'll see what happens next year.
Hey, Bakary Soumaré. I got my fingers crossed for you, man.
Probably not going to
happen. MLK High School.
Probably not going to happen.
NYC, let's
by
go.
By the way, I think Chris Armas should be in too, but he did not get in by the eligible veterans standard as well. Jimmy Conrad, not in. Four best 11s, defender of the year.
Also played at a World Cup, so has that national team side.
But
just with his content alone, throw him in the Hall of Fame
content creator.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk LAFC, get back to the soccer in week 29. I kind of mentioned it, teased it there. Toronto FC almost knocked him off. Toronto FC were up 1-0 until the 95th, and then Chris Mavinga kicked down Latif Blessing and was shocked, just shocked that that was a penalty kick. They did have to use video review for that one. But now LAFC have not won a game in 5 games. That's weird. That's not what they were. That's not what we're used to talking about. What did Toronto FC do here? What have teams been doing? What's the scouting report for those that want to spoil this best ever party? Are teams adjusting to LAFC or are LAFC swooning?
Well, it's a combination of things. I mean, it coincides with Carlos Vela going down with an injury and then now with Diamande being out. So when you lose that and the fluidity of the team, I know Bob spoke about the midfielders going away and, international duty coming back and they're not in sync and teams now are playing them different and they're trying to, not allow Atuesta time and space on the ball to dictate games, even though he still was able to get that cross off to Latif Blessing to get that penalty kick. It's just teams are I guess, better suited to play against LAFC because now they've had a full season to figure out what works and what doesn't when you're playing against Carlos Vela and how do you stop this team. Sure, they're still going to be the favorites, but it's going to be a lot harder in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I do think, in the end, it really does come down to personnel. Vela got hurt. Diamande's gone. With that happening, of course there's going to be a regression in how the team plays. And it's been a pretty clear regression, I think. The other thing, though, is the way LA plays, they're betting that you can't punish them. The risk that they're taking is okay, we're going to throw our fullbacks way up high, and we are going to be so good on the ball. And so good if we lose it at winning the second ball and getting immediate pressure to it that we're going to choke you to death and you're never going to have a chance to get out of your own end and hit us on the break. And teams have gotten better at understanding where on the field LA is making, LAFC are making that bet, and then gotten better at positioning themselves and being patient with their wingers and saying, okay, you're not, like, you have to stay high and wide. You have to punish Betashor or Harvey for going up, and you do that by staying 20 yards away from them. I think teams have gotten smarter and more disciplined about that. Christian Pavone for the Galaxy, I mean, that was really the blueprint moment, and we saw it from Tsubasa Endo, of all people, this week. Tsubasa's great off the ball, by the way, but the way he was playing, it was like, He wasn't even a winger. He was just a wide forward, just there to say, okay, Betashor, if you're going forward, I'm hitting that space you just took. And Toronto did that.
And Tsubasa Endo can't even tie Pavone's shoes. So you throw in Pavone and Antuna when he, just because of pace alone,
yeah,
just two guys that can burn you on the outside, and you throw Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the box. LA Galaxy just are perfectly suited to play against LAFC. That's what it comes down to, and that's why they've struggled against them when you talk about hurt being able to hurt them. Now, that's not saying defensively LA Galaxy.
Right, I was about to say.
Right? Yeah. But attacking-wise, the Galaxy are exactly how the way they play are exactly how you go
at LAFC. And you even think back to like this stretch of games. I mean, Mason Toy's a center forward, but think about where that first goal came from. That came from, he was in the space vacated by the left back on the overlap. Philadelphia, Shabilko got the goal, but if you watched that game, it was Philly's wingers just tormenting LAFC through about the first 40 minutes or so.
And Shabilko floated wide
yep.
a lot, even himself.
Yep.
And, like, hangs out on that left
side. So this is it. The blueprint's out there. And now LAFC have to adjust a little bit. They did a little bit. Betashor was a little more conservative, I think, after about 25 minutes. And then the second half, bringing Blackman in, who has recovery speed.
Now, you may have heard us mention this. No Adama Diomande. And in case you did not see the news here on Friday of last week, Diomande voluntarily entered the MLS Substance Abuse and Behavioral Health Program. So that's why he was not available against Toronto FC. 8 goals, 7 assists in 2019. A little of a downtick from last year when he arrived a couple months in and really tore it up. He is going to be barred from team activities for an unknown period of time. That could stretch through the playoffs. Could stretch through the playoffs. Per Kevin Baxter at the LA Times, a league official not authorized to speak publicly on the issue, said Diomande is okay himself. He has no personal health problems. He entered the program to deal with, quote, personal issues and will not be able to resume regular team activities until he's cleared by program officials. Again, we won't speculate on that aspect of it, but we can talk about now what you do without that center forward. Because Christian Ramirez, who, by the way, will probably see LAFC on Wednesday because LA play Houston Dynamo, they traded him away.
You think he's going to celebrate?
Maybe. Not a 0% chance, I would say, for Christian Ramirez to bust out the Superman. Now what? It's because Carlos Vela in the middle is not Carlos Vela in space on the right in that little channel between the outside backs, cutting in onto the left foot. It's just not the same player, Dave. So what do you do?
I think you still play him at center forward because it's, one, your only option, and two, he's really the only one who's played there outside of Diomande and Ramirez over the course of the season. They did it against San Jose at home. When he scored that unbelievable goal that may have been the goal of the year or all time in MLS history. And it changes his role a little bit, but I was in the press conference and talked to Bob Bradley about it, and he said it's something we've been working on with Vela all year. He doesn't love it, and you can understand why. He doesn't want to get kicked in the back. He doesn't want to have to deal with center backs.
It's brutal.
You saw the balls over the top that they played when they were under pressure, and he has to go up for headers against, you know, Chris Mavinga and Omar Gonzalez, and he's like, who signed up for this?
No, you have no space to operate in
right.
the middle.
But when he does drop off, mm-hmm. he can get lost. And when he does, that's when he becomes himself, when he can run at guys. The key right now is going to be Diego Rossi and Brian Rodriguez. How do they play off him? And I think you need to find time when Rossi floats middle and plays as the center forward to allow Vela to go wide and relax a little bit. And Rodriguez needs to understand that he has to be a hard second forward and get in the box, because there was a few times against TFC they created things, and then Vela helps create it down on the end line, and there's no one in the middle to finish because that's where Diomande would be.
Right.
So there's those moments that they're going to lose, but at the same time, what center back in MLS can mark Carlos Vela? What center back in MLS wants to follow Carlos Vela out of the middle? And on top of that, they're going to have a bye week one, so you're going to get 2 days to prepare for them, and then you got to go into the Banc of California Stadium and play them. They're still easily the biggest threat.
Yeah, and then you see what TFC did this past weekend, which is, all right, let's just have a resolute game plan where we're just going to stuff the middle. We're going to clog it up, stay compact, and then when we attack, we go. we throw those numbers forward and we attack from the wings. And you saw they came down the right side, through Josie, out the other side to Endo, and it resulted in a goal. And it,
but one of the keys there is Josie.
Yes.
Who has a Josie? You have Zlatan, but like, you know what I mean? That goal was created because of his gravity, yeah, and everyone came tight, and he found Endo. And I thought they were really good throughout the game, but a lot of it came through him. And that is, you know, that's a trump card no one else can play.
Nobody in the Western Conference has that. Raul Ruiz Diaz has not been that. Toy or Rodriguez or Darwin, they aren't that. Zlatan, okay, he's that.
Demir Krylak might be.
Demir
Krylak, he was in the playoffs last year.
Nah, Cobra, nah. San Jose doesn't have that. All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little more about TFC. By the way, a little nugget that I thought was good from your column. Doyle, Toronto FC are 6-1-5 in Omar Gonzalez's 12 starts.
Yeah,
good center backs. Yeah,
should be 8-1-3, right? This game and then the Westberg Howler in New England a couple of weeks back. They've been a lot better with Omar.
Chad Marshall theorem on that one. Let's talk Canadian Championship.
Can we just not put Omar Gonzalez and Chad Marshall in the same conversation in 2019?
No, the theorem. Cool. The theorem.
All right, cool.
Go read the theorem. All right?
Is it written?
Or have Bobby explain it to you. 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday, Canadian Championship. It's a little bit, you know, I like rubbed it with coffee grounds and just to make it look kind of old-timey. Wednesday, BMO Field, 1-0 right now. Impact based on a Nacho Piatti golazo in the first leg. Johnny from the Six says, let's face it, you guys don't talk enough about the Canadian Championship, fierce rivalries, upsets, and awesome environments characterized this year's cup competition. And Johnny, here we go. I want to talk about Piatti, though. In like a larger sense than just this game.
You just said, here we go. We should talk about
this. Okay, specifically then.
And then you'd change the subject.
Well, I've been wanting to talk about Piatti for a long time.
You should have done it. You don't respect
Canada.
Player,
one of my favorite players of all time.
Mine too. Mine too. But he might not be
Soccer Hall of Fame.
This might be it for Nacho Piatti.
I mean, talented-wise and just the entertainment.
Yeah.
Just watching him on the field, dicing up people 1v1. Second to none.
The Impact probably not going to make the playoffs. They went to LA and lost this weekend. They were saving it for the Canadian Championship in that CCL spot, it seems. Their CEO, Kevin Gilmore, had said earlier in the year that they would exercise Piatti's option for 2020. He made, I think, $4.4 million this year, and he played a grand total so far of 9 games in Major League Soccer and scored 3 goals. That's not a great return. Well, Gilmore walked that back to the Bird Dog, Sam Stachel, recently and said, whoa, we'll let the sporting director make that decision when he comes in. Probably the right move from Kevin Gilmore. Now, he doesn't look like the bad guy. Probably the sporting director does if he doesn't re-up Nacho Piatti.
Yeah, real great. Yeah.
And that's just the way I'm reading
it. Well, underlings are
for. He said, what did I say? No, wasn't me.
Wasn't me. We'd love, our intent is to exercise this option, said Gilmore, but the sporting director is going to have to come in and validate that. So we shall see. Would you do it? Nacho Piatti, 35 in 2020. Perhaps a CCL spot where Nacho's been massive in the past.
If you could guarantee me his health and he's going to play,
how many games
on the field?
Is 17 enough?
24. Okay. If you can give me 24 games, I'll put the contract right in front of him.
The number is going to be large based on the new deal that Nacho earned and they gave him. Feels like maybe too much money for a 35-year-old?
Yeah.
Not if he's going to deliver. If he's on the field,
agreed.
If he's healthy, he's going to play.
Agreed. If
he's going to deliver.
If he delivers at 2018, 2017, 2016 levels, 17, 17, 16 goals, and then 25 assists over the course of those 3 years, yep, Montreal, you do it.
Yep.
But you don't know.
I would say yes, I would do it because they haven't proven that they can replace him. They've tried to bring people in to play with him that are somewhere on his level, and they haven't really been able to do it. They've brought in Bojan now. They have tight air. It just seems like, to me, whatever you get from him is worth it for them because you're not going to replace it, I think, holistically with someone who is going to give you 25 games of, you know, somewhat close to Piatti level. So, yeah, I would bring him back.
What if that money, you could get him on a little bit of a lesser deal and spend the rest of the money elsewhere?
Where are you going to spend it elsewhere? I've had this conversation.
A lot of different places.
Center back
would be a place to start.
But I've had this conversation a bunch with MLS executives, and they say, if you can give a player $4 million and get the production out of Piatti and it's guaranteed, you give it to him. Because everything else is an unknown. Because some players you bring in and you have all this expectations and they give you 2 goals, 3
goals. But they've been doing that now for 4 years and they've made the playoffs once.
But think they're going to get DP center back?
And like,
no.
Piatti is unknown now. He's going to be 35. He played 500 minutes this year. Like, I understand, like, you want to reward the guy. If it was me, I would say, we're going to give you the El Seno treatment. You just be 30 minutes fit, and we're going to use you as a game breaker. Here's TAM money. Like, if they could get him, you know, 3 years at 1.4 per, something like that.
Yeah, because he's not going to get that money anywhere else at this age.
Right. So. Well, once he's over the threshold, he's hitting your cap at 550. You're not spending the DP money on someone else. It doesn't really matter. If they pay him $1.5 million or $4.5 million, it doesn't really matter for your cap.
Well, that is a DP spot you can't fill otherwise.
For sure. But are they going to go out and get another DP?
They just got Bojan.
For sure. I want to see those two play together. Yeah, that's my thing, is like, give Piatti the money and have – now Piatti has weapons. It's not. It's always been just Piatti when you're watching Montreal.
They should spend it on a scouting department.
Hey-o.
Oh.
Hey-o. Well, they got a big game on Wednesday. We'll see if they can push their way into CCL. And maybe – you know how the Impact value that. There's no doubt that they
– hey, they can still get in the playoffs.
We're one of the first teams that looked at CONCACAF Champions League and said, we're going to build our preseason around this. We're going to make it a focus. And they went to a final. They almost won the thing.
In fairness, they did it before they joined MLS.
That too.
And they probably got
a semifinal.
Yeah, they went to a semifinal.
That's right. They did in like
2010?
9 or 10.
Can anybody say Eddie Sabrango?
Yes, the legend.
What about a new coach as well? No?
Well, that's another big decision for the sporting director, by the way.
Yeah.
There's some decisions.
Future me will figure that one out.
We don't have to worry about that.
Here just being Ted Mosby.
Yeah, future me. I like that. Future Toronto FC are going to have to figure out Michael Bradley, too. So let's just have the same conversation here.
Mm-hmm.
TIFO recently from the Toronto FC supporters, your city, your legacy, our captain forever, with Michael Bradley being raised up to the rafters at BMO. Jozy Altidore got his 3-year contract extension back in February when the whole thing with Sebastian Giovinco was going down, and they basically chose Jozy, it seemed. Bradley's status is TBD, though. He's going to be 33 middle of next year. He says he's as settled in Toronto as he's ever been. It's pretty clear he wants to stay. I mean, look, he's one of the highest paid players in MLS, like top 5 highest paid. So I understand. I'd feel really settled anywhere too. But what he's done in Toronto, rebuilding that club, sinking his fingers into what was a dumpster. There was a dumpster. It was bad.
It was a bloody big deal.
It was a bloody big deal. What should Toronto
do? So much of this depends upon the CBA, right? Like, if the TAM level, if there's still TAM, if it's $2 million, and you get Michael Bradley for, I don't know, 1.8 per year for 2 years with an option, that seems like a pretty good deal, because I know he's struggled at times, but these last 3-4 games, he's started to look like the old Michael Bradley again, which is one of the very best defensive midfielders in the league. But it, like, if you're using a DP slot on him as he turns 33, 34, 35 years old, that doesn't strike me as the best use of that.
I think you wait until the season finishes and you see where they end up. Do they make a good run? Do they get into the Eastern Conference Finals? How strong are they? And then you assess how Michael Bradley did in these, you know, last month. He can't cover the amount of ground he used to. That's a fact. He's lost a step or two in his speed. He's not as quick. The impact that you normally get from Michael Bradley is not there. Now, does that take away from his you know, ball-winning skills, his ability to deliver great cross-field passes? No. But I think you have to reassess how much you pay your defensive midfielder when he's not as influential as he once was.
I think that it should make sense to him and to the club that there is a number that makes sense, that he should be at that club. He should finish his career with them, but not as a DP. And I think there's plenty of space to work in there that makes sense to Michael Bradley and makes sense to TFC. And I agree with everything you just said, but now add a third DP, because you do trust Toronto to go out and spend that money.
Right.
So his job's going to get easier next year.
Well,
because they're going to bring more talent in.
Well, don't you think they'll add another DP in the new CBA? So it'll be 4, five?
No idea. Maybe it'll be 2.
Give me 2 more.
Maybe there won't be DPs anymore. We don't know.
But I would say for Michael Bradley, I think that's the right city for him. I think that he can do special things with the club after he retires. And I think that he can still be good for them next year on the right number, because they will add more reinforcements
around him. Do you think Michael Bradley is going to be better suited to be a head coach when he's done, or a more of a GM role?
Probably a head coach.
Head coach?
Yeah.
You think he'd fall right into his father's
Man, I don't.
So. I think his dream scenario would be Peter Vermes and just do both.
Those spots aren't as common as they once
were.
Well,
what do you think? You're the one who
played. Yeah, I was
going
to say, I would be hesitant to make that claim because I don't know Michael like that.
Yeah, coach 100%. I mean, he studies the game. He's got his father to, you know, ask him for all the advice. And, you know, they have deep conversations about where the game is going and how to get the best out of players and the right tactics. And they understand that it's always growing. I remember Bob Bradley was all about Italian style tactics, mm-hmm. you know, the old AC Milan teams, Inter Milan, and then right to Pep Guardiola. And then now it's studying how Pep plays the game. And the game's always evolving and you always have to change. And I think that's what these two are so special, because they know that and they submerge themselves in soccer.
I'm with you, Dave, on this one, in that Toronto and Michael should find a way to make this thing work, because what he's done, what he's accomplished, the legacy he's building, you saw it in the TIFO, you've seen it in their accomplishments. Why walk away from that right now if there's a middle ground that you both can be happy with? We'll see what happens with those. Who wants to make the playoffs? Toronto FC answered that question in the affirmative.
Wait, we didn't even talk about the Canadian Championship, Weeby.
Well, sorry, we have 10 minutes left.
1-0 to Montreal in the first leg.
Yeah.
Second leg is Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m.
I already named all this. You weren't paying attention.
That's fair. just like you don't pay attention to Canada.
That's turnabout is fair play. Turnabout is fair play there. Who's going to make the playoffs in both conferences at the bottom of the table around the line? Nobody wants it. You know, New England, bad. Chicago, worse. Montreal, three straight losses. Orlando City. FC Dallas, no wins in the last three. San Jose, three straight losses. Portland, loss, tie, all at home. This is
all right. Can we just? This is hapless. Can we all agree on New England making the playoffs?
Let me ask you. Can I honestly? A few like 2 months ago, they
fell backwards.
You told every team who was out. Mm-hmm. How accurate were you at that time?
I'm extremely accurate.
You've not gone back and checked.
No. I remember all of them. All the ones he said. He's right.
Was he?
Yeah.
I just remember supporting KC.
Give it to me.
Ooh. How about this from David Wright in Tennessee? Doyle broke down the sad resumes of the clubs in the quote-unquote race for the final spot in the East. You can play it to the two out West. Does that suggest to you that the playoff field is too big when teams with bad seasons can still qualify?
Why are you looking at me?
I don't know. I'm looking around. Do you want me to take this one?
I thought you were directing that at Doyle.
Usually Doyle fills air, so I just look at Doyle.
I felt like you directed all of a that.
All of a sudden, it's like me on the Canadian Championship. Just has nothing to say. Look, I'm okay with it, because ultimately this was a change not for this year alone. It was for years down the line as more teams get added to the league and the competition.
Maybe next year.
Yes, next year and the next
year. I would not be shocked if there were 8 in each conference next year.
I'm hoping that there are not and they continue to be 7, because I like that the number 1 seed gets that reward. And I think the number 2 seed gets a reward too, which is to play these hapless teams that are trying to make the playoffs. Like, no offense, Charlie, but the way the Revs are playing, I hope whoever finishes second in the East, whether it's Philly or it's Atlanta or maybe NYCFC, who knows, just shellacks them. Just works them off the field. just gives them the old 1-2-3-4-5.
Why do you hate the Revs so much?
I don't hate the Revs, but the Revs don't.
But this is the thing. If you're a Revolution fan, you are just overjoyed that the team went from bottom of the Eastern Conference, bottom of the league in goal differential. You lost a GM who couldn't sign a player, who gave the worst contracts to players. And now you have Bruce Arena brought in. Excitement's there. He turns it around, gets the guys, bring in Gustavo Bow, who has been a sensational signing. And now they're flying. Just to get into a playoffs was a win. He just wanted them to be competitive, this New England Revolution team. Now they're making the playoffs, if things go well. But that's a win. That's a win for this franchise.
It's not going to be a win for Portland if they sneak in. I mean, it'd be kind. I guess it's a win based on everything else. If San Jose make the playoffs, it's
Portland
right there.
If Portland make it on the bottom of the conference, they're going to cruise. They're going to go on the road. They're going to counter. They're going to bunker and counter. They're going to be living in their sweet spot. They're going to be the 7th seed.
It'll be Sebastian Blanco all over again from last year. He is the most important player on the Portland Timbers.
This is what the Timbers have been waiting for. To be a low-seeded playoff.
What if they had to go to Seattle? Like, that's an unbelievable matchup for the first game of the playoffs. Like, I would love to see.
And the nice thing is there's no away goals, so nobody can be confused about the results. That's the best thing about that.
And Portland's already got a result in Seattle this year.
But I think that is a decent point in terms of maybe take out the Revs. There's no other team that's in the playoff race that you wouldn't want to watch. And no other matchup, I think. So from a pure entertainment point of view, also because it's not two legs, it's not like
plotting
180 minutes. Yeah. It's, okay, I'll I'll watch FC Dallas go to Minnesota for a winner-takes-all 90 minutes at Allianz Field.
That's just because you were next to Cobra this weekend, shirtless. Yeah.
We traded shirts.
Yeah.
How intimidating were those tattoos, though?
Well, I mean,
they looked pretty intense.
Yeah, I wake up every morning, I see something similar in the mirror. So.
Good Lord.
What I live.
Whoa.
Just kidding, Mom. I would never.
Whoa. Looking ahead to midweek here, some of these teams have opportunities to, you know, just win a game. What are you going to be watching? Wednesday, that's the final night of regular season midweek MLS. We do have some in the playoffs coming, but what are you going to be watching? What's most interesting to you? Dave, we'll start with you.
So I'll say RSL, LA Galaxy. It felt like RSL rotated going to New England. They didn't play what I would call their best group. So it'll be interesting to see them coming home. You know, now they're obviously going to go for this one, and the Galaxy are still in must-win territory. So it's two teams that could meet in the playoffs. They both need it. They both have a ton of talent in different spaces. So I think it's a good matchup.
And right now they're slated to play each other in the playoffs should the playoffs start today. Fourth and fifth, you know the line between fourth and fifth. That's home or away in the playoffs. So a big game, RSL and LA on Wednesday night. You can watch that one.
Where 9:30
p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. How about you, Doyle? What are you watching?
San Jose, Philly. And partially because these are two of the like three or four most entertaining teams in the league. And partially because of San Jose's self-immolation from this past weekend, which we didn't even touch on at
the
top of the show.
We are a clean team.
Oh, my God. That was like that Espinoza second yellow was the most obvious damn thing in the world.
Bobby Warshaw would say that it wasn't.
Oh, God.
Because on instant replay,
because he's Bobby,
he used the word reckless, and he said it's reckless multiple times, and he said it should be, but I wouldn't give it. I'm like, okay. The dude got frustrated and stomped somebody.
Listen, guys.
So red card.
What are you going to do?
Like right there at that point, it's 1-1 in Atlanta, and they had better of the game. They had better of the ball. But like they looked like the better team in Atlanta, and he lost his mind and did that. And then Almeida and Wando getting sent off. This is the first time Wando's been sent off in 360 professional games.
Say, Almeida has more sendings off in MLS than Wando did coming into this game.
Wow.
And like, so they're going into this game, and this is must, I don't want to say must win because Portland and Dallas keep hemorrhaging points, but you gotta, like, it's home field. You've got, if you're a playoff team, you have to win this. And they're gonna have to do it without their head coach and their two best attacking players. This is insane. And then the flip side is Philly. Like, they just had a tough result, their first tough result in a little while here. They're going to want to bounce back as well because they want that second spot in the Eastern Conference. They want to play the Revs. They don't want to play freaking TFC or Wayne Rooney's DC United in that 3-6 game.
Meanwhile, the Revs.
Or the Red Bulls, they just lost it.
Right. Yeah.
The Revs are going to Portland, Charlie. Good opportunity there.
That's my game to watch.
Portland at home.
Portland haven't scored a goal at home in the past three matches. That's crazy to me. So you have that. Is Brian Fernandez going to show up? Are we going to see the Brian Fernandez we saw when he first came into the league, scoring goals left and right? And New England Revolution, Gustavo Bo, didn't start the last game. And you felt the effects of it. You saw it. They need him up there. They need him in the box scoring goals. So I'm going to be watching this one. It could be an exciting one.
I am watching Minnesota Sporting Kansas City. Loons could jump up to second in the Western Conference, and you want to avoid LAFC. I know they've had some good results against LAFC, but you want to be on the other side
of clinch?
The bracket. They would not clinch, but they would jump over Seattle, who I know.
Looking at clinch scenarios 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Speaking of clinching, Aiko Parra left at halftime with what Adrian Heath called diarrhea.
Clinching.
just saying. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Ike, he's coming after you.
Ike is day-to-day with...
he's really been on a streak toward that Defender of the Year category.
Pepto-Bismol.
They were wearing the whites for Minnesota, so you understand why Ike decided he had to come off. He's day-to-day with Bubble Guts,
the Paul Pierce of MLS.
And the Mud Butt.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. The truth.
He took off that headgear and was like,
Oh,
I gotta get out.
Yeah.
Sub.
Anyway, big opportunity for the Loons. Sorry about that. Sporting KC, meanwhile, absolutely collapsed against Colorado. No Matt Beasler for this one. He got two yellows.
What did I say? Cards. Stick a fork in him a
you
long time ago.
Stick a fork in him. They stuck a
Gone.
Fork in themselves in that match this week. And Colorado's still alive, though.
Boom.
Let's go Rapids. And finally, in the mailbag, who is the best German in MLS from the Toronto Duck? You have Julian Gressel, Florian Youngworth, Bastian Schweinsteiger, or Kai Wagner. Who you take?
Gressel.
Gressel all day.
Kasper Schibilko.
I don't think...
Isn't he German?
I don't think so. I think he's Polish.
I think he was born in Germany to Polish parents.
Really?
I don't know. It's like a Lucas Podolski situation.
Very
Yeah, he was born in Bielefeld.
Oh, didn't have him in my list, my research.
Still taking Gressel.
Yep. All right. Well,
oh, cool.
That's it for us here. We hope you had a good time. For Matt, for Charlie, for David, I'm Andrew Reed. David. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you on week? We'll see you on Thursday.